quite a reunion today. I see many faces that are familiar here. Nice to see everyone together again. We'll talk about the flats. The flats has been a favorite project of mine for over 20 years now, more than 20 years. And essentially, I hope today to describe some of the excavations, the archaeological work that was done at the Schuyler Flats in the early 1970s. During that time, a tremendous amount of information was recovered from the site about the 17th and 18th century colonial periods. We found thousands and thousands of artifacts, overwhelming numbers. And there's hardly enough time just to work on the material itself to study it and make the results available. But I'm happy today to be able to introduce a graduate student from SUNY Binghamton, who's here today, who is actually going to be writing his PhD dissertation on the excavations at the flats. And his name is Lon Baldwin, and he came here especially today to meet some of you and to see this lecture. Just stand up for a minute. And he, at this point, has been doing extensive research on Aaron Van Curler and the early 17th and mid-17th century people at the flats, also the Indian trade that occurred there. His special interest is the contact with the Indians. Now, the Schuyler Flats House is a well-known historic building. It was a well-known historic building. There are many, many 19th century photographs of the house and books that were published in the last century. It has a familiar history to readers of architecture. One of my teenage interests as a teenager was local history and archaeology. And my hobby was to take photographs of old houses in the Albany area. And one of the houses that I tried to get to, I didn't have a car at that time, so I had a hard time getting around a few times. My parents were very good about driving me around. But one of the houses I really had a hard time getting to was the Schuyler Flats, because it was a little too far from where I lived. So I'll start with the slides now. I'll show you how that house looked for many years. I'll turn the lights off. Maybe you can turn them off there. And in the numbers of books. This is a photograph of the flats as it looked in about 1880, I think. The famous Schuyler Flats house. And I had, of course, driven by on Broadway and Cohoes and Menands and looked towards the house, but never really got in there to see it for many years as a teenager. I was interested in old houses. I was interested in British military history. And of course, at the flats, it was the famous campground of the British Army. Each year they tried to attack Canada. Finally, on one Sunday morning after church, we came to look at the flats, and I had my camera with me for the first time. It was Sunday morning, November 11th, 1962. And as we drove in towards the house, it had a strangely different appearance that I noticed from about Broadway as I went into it. And as I got closer, this is how it looked. This was Sunday morning, November 11th, 1962, and I finally got here. The only photographs that I could take of this house were after it had burned the night before. The house had been empty and vacant, and just a matter of time, I suppose, before this happened. But I carefully tried to document everything I could of the ruins, because the next few days after this, they were knocked down. That's a view of the south fireplace. During the next 8 years, I went to college and I went to graduate student, but my interest in the Schuyler Flats site continued all those years. I was very worried about what would happen to the site eventually. Certainly, those were the years of development in the Albany area, and I thought that probably the archaeological resources that were still here would be threatened by development. I collected some old photographs that my friends had of the house before it burned. Here's a photograph taken on June 11, 1957, the day that the plaque was unveiled on the west wall of the house. There was a plaque marking the history of the house that was unveiled. That plaque remained there until the day the house burned. Here's a photograph, I think probably the 1940s, showing the house in color. One of the first color photographs of the house. And here's a view, I think, in the 1930s. At this time, you notice on the south, on the north side of the house, there's been a porch added that wasn't there in the first photograph. The front part of the house, the part facing the river with the gambrel roof, which is this part here, we think was probably built around 1735, sometime in the first half of the, maybe even the first quarter of the 18th century. But 1735 would be a good date for that, I think. The rear part here is much earlier. It's probably from the late 17th century, or even maybe 1690, or even earlier than that. We think around 1690, however. The steep roof is typical of that period. The side aisles that were added here and here were added on probably in the 1760s. Now this house stands on the Flats Farm, which was purchased in 1672 by Philip Peterson Schuyler. And he bought the farm from the Rensselaer family. Philip Peterson Schuyler was born here in Amsterdam in 1628. This is a view of the old straw market on the canal in Amsterdam, and it's the place where Philip Peterson Schuyler was born, in his father's house. He came to America in 1650, and by 1652 he was in the new village of Beaverwick, which of course is today Albany. The Flats Farm up north of Albany on Beaverwick was a rich and valuable place for farming, but also for trade, because Indians coming from the north towards Fort Orange would have to pass by the Flats. Anyone living at the Flats would have access to those Indians before they got to Fort Orange. The farm passed from Philip Peterson Schuyler to his son Peter Schuyler, and Peter Schuyler was born in 1657. He was, of course, a very wealthy trader and very famous politician. He was especially important in his relations with the Indians, who respected him and seemed to trust him more than others. He was the first mayor of Albany when Albany received its charter in 1686. He certainly had a house in Albany, but I suspect that the Flats was his country home as well. A detail from a map made by Thomas Pownall in 1756. And it clearly demonstrates the importance of the Schuyler Flats, shown here as Schuyler's farm. North of Albany, we have the Rensselaer Manor House at Waterbleat, or present-day Patroon Street in Albany. And north of that, about 7 miles north of Albany, the Schuyler Flats. It was the Rensselaer Farm, the Manor House, and the Schuyler Flats were clearly the two major settlements north of Albany at this time. Young Philip Schuyler was the son of Peter Schuyler, and he was born in 1696. Philip married his cousin, Margarita Schuyler. Now, Margarita Schuyler was the daughter of Peter Schuyler's brother, Johannes Schuyler. And, of course, Johannes Schuyler was also a mayor of Albany after Peter. The famous book by Anne Grant, Memoirs of an American Lady, describe Margarita Schuyler in great detail. It's a very important book about Albany, about the colonial period. Much of the book is about the Schuyler Flats. Anne Grant tells a great deal about Margarita Schuyler, and she tells a lot about the house itself at the Schuyler Flats. Margarita Schuyler had a nephew named Philip J. Schuyler, who was born in Albany in 1733. Now, Philip J. Schuyler was familiar with the Flats farm, I'm sure, and it was because it was occupied by his aunt Margarita, and also his more distant uncle. Philip J. Schuyler was a militia captain in the 1755 campaign against Canada, and he actually was with his militia regiment down there at the Flats when they were camping before the Battle of Lake George. Now, Philip J. Schuyler, of course, is famous because he is the one who built Schuyler Mansion in Albany. This was built in 1762. And it's still standing and operated as a state historic site. Unfortunately, though, the Schuyler Flats house is no longer standing as we saw. Here's a view of the site in June of 1971. This is just before excavations were started. At this time, the site was owned by a corporation named Sirloin and Saddle, and they owned restaurants and planned, we thought, to build a restaurant here at some point. So Sirloin and Saddle, at this point, owned the land, and we believed that it was threatened with development, that the development of a new restaurant and parking lots and so forth would certainly disturb and destroy the archaeological remains. In July that year, the first excavations were begun. This was work that was begun by the State Historic Trust, where I then worked and still work as an archaeologist. It's now the New York State Office of Parks and Recreation. But this work was begun with the cooperation of Jean Alton, who was instrumental in making it possible. She's a town historian then and today. And also with an archaeological field school that was organized by the Helderberg Workshop. After we began this work, it wasn't very long before we began uncovering a really interesting cobblestone pavement around the outside of the house. This is a cobblestone courtyard. The artifacts seem to indicate that it was built probably around 1780. This would be shortly before the death of Margarita Schuyler, who died in 1782. It was quite extensive, and we uncovered the stones, mapped them all very carefully, but we left them there. We didn't remove the stones because it's not very often that one can see an authentic cobblestone courtyard from the 18th century. Unfortunately, since that time, vandals have gotten in there and torn the stones up for the most part, so we'll have to restore this at some point. But the original stonework has been pretty much destroyed by vandals. But among the stones, above the stones, we found a lot of artifacts from the 18th century. Little small pieces of shoe buckles, for example. Shoe buckles were especially common in among the stones, possibly broken from their shoes as they stumbled across the stones or something, I don't know. But we found many shoe buckles and fragments of shoe buckles, and all of these would date from the 18th century period. Straight pins, such as these, which were handmade, were also quite common. So we have a very interesting collection of late 18th century and colonial 18th century artifacts from around this house, as you might expect. The clay pipes here are all from the 18th century, very common in that time. Many fragments of ceramics. These are all fragments of pearlware, which would date from after about 1780. Here's a fragment of a green shell-edged pearlware plate that could have been made as early as the 1780s. And we have creamware and porcelain and other kinds of ceramics. Here's porcelain from the 18th century, hand-decorated porcelain from China. Very expensive and a symbol of the wealth of the family, I'm sure. Creamware of this form is a plate of the so-called spearhead pattern reconstructed from fragments that were found there. And here's a little creamware sauce boat. This dates probably from around 1770 to about 1790. Of course, it's been reconstructed from all the fragments that were excavated. A little bit earlier, we have this kind of yellow pottery, yellowware, with a combed slip decoration. And there's white salt glaze stoneware, which dates from the 1720s to about 1760 or so. And it has a scratched blue decoration. So anyway, those are briefly some of the ceramics that we found here from the 18th century period. We also found a few military objects that were obviously from the military camps there of the 1750s. Musket balls, as well as a few gun flints and gun parts from Brown Best muskets were found. Also of interest, however, and this is even more exciting perhaps, was the evidence of trade with the Indians, even in the 18th century. There were artifacts such as this Micmac pipe from Canada. The trade with the Indians from Canada in the 18th century was a very sensitive political issue. The people at the Flats, the Schuyler family in particular, were accused of this illegal trade with the Indians from Canada, who were allied with the French. At the very same time, the British armies were gathering at the Flats to attack the French in Canada. you have evidence of illicit trade with the Indians of Canada coming to Albany to trade for furs and other goods at Albany, which were for the Indians cheaper than they were in Canada. So we have a few French-Canadian coins and this Micmac pipe and a few other things at the flats that are very important telltale indicators of this trade going on. A fishing spear fragment, this needs to be treated and the rust has to be removed yet. But this possibly was a trade item, certainly was used for spearing fish in the river at that time. So. Yeah, can you hear me back in the back? Okay, thank you. Well, I hope I don't, it sounds kind of noisy up here. Okay, that's good. But anyway, in addition to the 18th century material, though, we began uncovering some rather strange, well, I wouldn't say strange, but a little kind of poorly built walls beneath the 18th century layers that would appear to date from the 17th century. Now, this is still around the Schuyler Flats house that burned. And the artifacts among these stones pointed to a late 17th century date, something in the 1690s, possibly the house that was built in about 1690 from the records that we had when Peter Schuyler could have moved here, established his home. But the artifacts around these were quite different from the 18th century material, but the stonework is pretty crude. For example, here's a little shutter latch that is of iron. I've put it upside down on purpose, and you'll see why in a minute. But this is a very distinctive Dutch kind of piece of hardware. It's a little looped handle at the bottom there for this bolt that would have been used to latch a shutter. The exact same shutter latch bolts are very clearly shown in Dutch paintings of the 17th century. For example, here is a Dutch painting by Peter de Hoek, and the same identical little bolts are shown. This is the courtyard of a house in Delft by Peter de Hoek, painted in 1658. So there's a few things like this at the Schuyler Flats house that would appear to be much earlier, maybe than even 1690. This map of excavations around the house shows the courtyard and the walls of these earlier buildings. Also, there's a trench that ran here and jogged out, forming what we think was a bastion. Now, this trench, we believe, came from the corner of the building that burned in 1960. This is the house that was still standing in the 60s. But from this corner, we believe this is a trench for a stockade, because in 1745, at the worst point in time when the French were attacking Albany and the farms around Albany, this was kind of the northern outpost of military protection for Albany. And the house, we believe, was fortified and garrisoned by English soldiers in the 1740s. At that time, of course, Saratoga was attacked and burned by the French, so this was the northern outpost. And people of Albany were terrified of the French at this time. Some of the dates for these walls would have to be revised as we continue with the research on the artifacts. This map is a map that was made in 1656 by Adrian van der Donck. It shows Fort Orange very prominently up there at the center of an area that was already intensely settled by that time, with farms on both sides of the river, all through here. This was the colony of Rensselaerswyck, which is clearly spelled out, and this is the origin of the name colony. Town of colonies comes from that Dutch word, colony of Rensselaerswyck. The land on the west side of the Hudson River, north from Fort Orange to present-day Peebles Island, was purchased on August 6, 1630 from the Indians by Killian de Rensselaer. The flats was in that area. It was one of the finest, best, largest, most fertile farms in Rensselaerswyck. And of course, as I mentioned before, it was also very important a location for the Indian trade between Fort Orange and Canada. Adrian van der Donck, the man that made this map, settled on the Schuyler Flats farm. It wasn't called Schuyler Flats yet, it was just called the Flats. But Adrian van der Donck settled on this farm in 1642 against the specific wishes of Killian Vermeulen. When Killian Vermeulen found out about this, he was extremely angry because he wanted Adrian Manderdonk to settle on a different farm down below Fort Orange on the west side of the river. And he was furious. He had other plans for the flats. He had other people he wanted to live there instead. So he ordered Manderdonk to remove himself from the flats in 1643 to that farm south of Fort Orange. This is a view of the flats from across the river, and it simply shows that what remains of the flats today is still a very large out, pumping them dry and creating farmland in the Netherlands, and it was a speculative business. The Dutch population was greatly expanding, and the Dutch felt that they had a population problem. So when the area in the Hudson Valley was discovered to have fertile farmland, it was very apparent. View of some of that polder land in the Netherlands today, this was drained in the early 1600s, in the 1620s or 30s. It's called Schemmelhorn. This is the Schemmelhorn folder, and these famous windmills of Schemmelhorn are the mills that were used to keep the water drained out of the polder land. So there's a very, very close parallel here between the Netherlands and what's happening in North America. At the same moment that the Dutch were here also for trade, the farming aspect of it became especially important. Here's what was going on at the Schuyler Flats in September of 1971. A new sewer line was being built north and south along the river. It was cutting into this beautiful, rich soil. You can see here it's very dark and moist and rich. And as it went northward, it was getting close to where the old Schuyler Flats houses stood up here, where we were excavating. And we became a little nervous about this, possibly encroaching into the archaeological areas. As the sewer line was dug closer and closer to the Flats house, however, the first archaeological sites that we noticed were prehistoric sites that were being dug up, and just artifacts strewn around on the back dirt piles, prehistoric Indian sites. In fact, the sewer line dug through an Indian burial ground, and on the back dirt piles were Indian bones scattered around. Terrible thing to have happen. Well, Art Johnson stepped in at this point, and he organized a rescue excavation on the sewer line, uncovered some very important Indian remains and hearths and artifacts, and fortunately made a record of what would and was going to be destroyed. Here's some of the work being done on that sewer line route. Here's Art Johnson, in fact, on one day, telling about the discoveries on that sewer line to a group of students and school children that came down. In fact, we had hundreds of school children come down there as part of tour groups to see what was being found in 1971 and 72. And this is Art's little interpretation of one of the hearths. And he was able to identify the date of the hearth by the archaeological remains with it, the projectile point fragments from the pottery and so forth in some cases. But in this case, he had a projectile point associated with this hearth in that sewer line corridor. Next year, July of 1972, were the first excavations that we began to conduct south of the Schuyler Flats house, just south of it, towards where the sewer line is going to be. We thought that this site would be very likely disturbed by the machinery and the sewer line construction. The Schuyler Flats house, and this particular part of the site of the Schuyler Flats house, is a knoll of gravel. It's a gravel knoll that protrudes at the north end of the Schuyler Flats, at the north end of this fertile rich alluvial soil area. So there's two different kinds of soil down there. The alluvium, which was the farmland, and this gravel deposit, which was the place where they built the houses. At this particular part of the flat site, we've noticed a few 17th century artifacts, more than there were 18th century artifacts. So that made us a little bit interested in this as a possible 17th century site, much earlier than what we had found the previous year. As we uncovered the first few inches of soil, we immediately found this brick wall here, which was built with small 17th century bricks. The bricks of the 17th century period were much smaller than they were in the 18th century. Some of the bricks were yellow bricks that were made in the Netherlands, and some were red bricks that could have been made in this area. We don't know for sure. But as we continued this work and we uncovered this little fragment of wall, we were surprised to discover that the wall was one corner of a structure that once sat above a cellar hole. But the cellar hole, we discovered, was a cellar that was dug into the earth and was lined only with boards. It did not have brick walls or stone walls. And look at the gravel. Very difficult excavation to do in gravel. Gravel collapses and it's very difficult to keep the sides straight and so forth, but we did the best we could. But as we uncovered that wall, we discovered that the gravel ended, and from this lip onward to the left was all filled in soil. And here was a remnant of a wooden board wall, a vertical wall that was originally the cellar wall of a cellar. From here to here was simply originally backfill, as after the cellar was constructed, and the cellar actually began here. So that the open cellar was from this point to the left. Then as we did all that excavation, we reached the bottom of the cellar floor and found the footing of the wooden wall here. It comes right across, and the footing of the wall was rested on these brick footings. And the wall of the cellar consists of nothing more than just wooden planks. It was a wooden plank wall, and obviously this is not a permanent kind of construction. The cellar collapsed, obviously, after a few years, and caved in. And on the cellar, on the profile of this side here, you can see the collapsed in soil where it fell in as the boards gave way. In fact, here's another view. This is the slumped wall. As it collapsed, the boards are back in here. And this is the gravel that was dumped in there afterwards when they abandoned the site and filled it in. So this is all the gravel fill from after the house collapsed. And this is the sloping, slumped wall of the collapsed wood wall. In one side of the cellar, we found this feature, which was pretty interesting. It was full of brick fragments and some wood, and here, and a little bit of a brick wall here and over here. We carefully uncovered this, brick by brick, and finally uncovered this, which was a cellar stairway leading into the cellar from the south side of the cellar. The wooden steps were still there. Well, I guess you can see that all right. This is the cellar stairway and some of the plank wooden floor here of the cellar itself. Outside the house, on the original ground surface, were these Indian hearths that were actually prehistoric. They were from the Indians who lived here centuries and centuries before the Dutch came. So we have different occupations on the same site. Here, of course, is the brick wall, and here's the cellar itself over there. A cross-section of the entire site was drawn from the profile drawings of the fieldwork. This is a drawing by Gwen Jouett, who's here today, by the way. She's the artist that compiled all of our field records together and produced this drawing of that cross-section. And she also did the coloring of the different layers of pencil here. But it's very interesting to see the plank walls, how they collapsed part way and the earth fell in behind them. This plank wall here was originally vertical back here somewhere. And from looking at the profile, you can reconstruct exactly the process by which the house collapsed. This is a composite of our field notes and our drawings in the field of the floor plan of the cellar. The floor beams are visible here and here. It was kind of an L-shaped cellar. Now, the cellar measures about 19 feet by 29 feet in size.
When Adrian Vanderdonk was ordered to leave the flats in 1643, Eric Van Curler was sent here instead to build a new farmhouse at the flats. The house that Eric Van Curler built in 1643 was to be 120 feet long and 28 feet wide. Now, this was a long, long building, and it apparently combined the barn and the dwelling under one long roof. The barn section, according to his letter in 1643, was to be 80 feet long out of the 120 feet, and the dwelling part of the house was to be 40 feet long and 28 feet wide. The entire building was 28 feet wide, but the house was 40 feet, and the barn section attached to it was 80 feet, making a total of 120 feet. Under the dwelling, which was 40 by 28, Van Curler explained that he was building a cellar that was 20 feet long and 28 feet wide. Now, this cellar, almost exactly, is that same size. And the artifacts in and around the cellar here were entirely consistent with the 1643 date. Therefore, we believe this was actually the cellar that Van Curler built at that time, in 1643. This is the record that we drew in the field, and here is the drawing by Gwen Gillette of the same area, a little more easy to see, perhaps, the cellar. It was 19 feet by 28 feet wide, which would have fit nicely within Van Curler's house. The house of 120 feet long was probably similar to many of the old farmhouses in the Netherlands. This is a detail from a painting by Peter Bruegel, dated 1568, and it shows...